This interview with Dr. Neil Jackson of the University of Manchester about gravitational lensing is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, visit jodcast.net.
With me is Dr. Neil Jackson from Manchester University, and he's a member of the Gravitational Lensing Group. Neil, can you explain to us what gravitational lenses are?
Well, basically, a gravitational lens system is a system where you have two objects in the distant universe which are nearly coincident along a line of sight. And what happens in that case is that the more distant object obviously emits light and radio waves, and those are bent by the action of the gravitational field of the object that's closer to us. So typically we would have a quasar at a very high redshift, and we would have a galaxy at a much lower redshift along the line of sight, and the light from the distant object would be bent by the action of the gravitational field.
This works similar to an actual optical lens?
It works very similar to an actual optical lens, but it doesn't produce nice images, nice focused images, the way that normal optical lenses do. What it tends to produce is it tends to produce multiple images of the background source. And in the case where the alignment is very good, you can sometimes get what's known as an Einstein ring, which is a ring image rather than just multiple images of the background source.
You mentioned Einstein ring, obviously named after the famous physicist. Has he contributed to the idea of gravitational lensing?
Yes, quite a lot of people over the last 100 years have thought about gravitational lensing. Einstein was actually not convinced that it was a real prospect that this effect would be observed, although it was, in fact, the first observational evidence for general relativity actually came from Eddington's solar eclipse expedition, where the gravitational bending of light of a star around the sun was observed. Various people during the 20th century, notably Zwicky, came up with the idea that gravitational lensing could be observed around distant galaxies. Zwicky was ahead of his time in many ways, and this was one of them. And it was only about 40 years after Zwicky's prediction that the first gravitational lens was actually discovered in terms of lensing by a galaxy.
So with gravitational lenses, you can study quasars, which I believe are the active nuclei of distant galaxies. Why would gravitational lenses be useful to observe these objects?
Well, there's a number of reasons for gravitational lensing being very useful. One reason is that as well as producing multiple images and producing distorted images of background objects, they also magnify background objects. And that means that you can study objects which would be otherwise too faint for you to see. For example, for several years, the highest redshift galaxy known was one which was magnified and gravitationally lensed by the action of a distant cluster. Otherwise, without that magnification, it wouldn't have been seen. So that's one reason. The other reason is that gravitational lensing is sensitive only to the mass of the lensing galaxy. And that's quite nice because it doesn't care whether the mass is ordinary baryonic matter or whether it's dark matter. So it responds to the total mass field. So hopefully by studying gravitational lensing, we can obtain some sort of information about the whole of the matter of the lensing galaxy, not just the light matter that we can see.
So you observe the lens itself as well by studying gravitational lensing?
Yes, that's right. It's a sort of inverse problem. We look at the images of the background object, and then we try to work out from that the mass profile, the mass distribution of the foreground galaxy.
You mentioned dark matter. It's a very familiar term, but can you briefly describe what dark matter is?
Dark matter is a form of matter which is thought to make up something like 80% or so of the total matter. It's not in a baryonic form. That is, it's not your standard matter made up of protons, neutrons, electrons, all the rest of it. But its presence is inferred from a number of observations independently of gravitational lensing. For example, otherwise, if you don't invoke any sort of dark matter, it's impossible to explain the rotation curves of galaxies. That is, the motion in the outer parts of galaxies is very difficult to explain without invoking dark matter. And so there's a number of lines of reasoning which lead one to the conclusion that dark matter must be present.
So you can actually observe dark matter using gravitational lenses.
Yes, in theory. In practice, it turns out to be quite difficult to do in the cases of galaxy lensing. The reason for that is that there are these irritating baryons, so there are all these irritating protons, neutrons and electrons that make up the things that we know about, and baryons tend to collect at the centres of galaxies. And the region of the galaxy which gravitational lensing probes is the region where the baryons start to become dominant, because the images are typically formed, projected fairly close to the centres of galaxies. And so you're faced with the challenge of separating out the light matter and the dark matter, which is not always easy to do.
But gravitational lensing can help you along with that.
It can help you along with that, yes. And the problem is basically that you don't get that many images. You typically get two or four images, and that means that you only probe the potential, or you only probe the matter distribution of the lensing galaxy at a few places.
So I understand that you're part of the Cosmic Lens All-Sky Survey?
Mm-hmm. This was a very large survey which was done by a number of groups, including Jodrell Bank and also groups in the Netherlands and the US. And it lasted for about 10 years, and it was an attempt to find as many gravitational lenses as possible. And the way we did that was to go out to the Very Large Array in New Mexico, and we observed 16,500 background radio sources. And it was essentially an exercise in looking for a needle in a haystack. What we would do is we would look at all these background radio sources which were chosen to have intrinsically simple structure. So they were chosen to be just point sources, basically. And we looked for anything that was not a point source. And of those 16,500, there were 22 gravitational lenses identified, and they were identified by virtue of not being simple point sources. There would typically be two or four images of a background object which just happened to have a foreground galaxy sitting in front of it. Now, it's a needle in a haystack job because, of course, you only get lucky enough to have something along the line of sight once every 600 or once every 800 cases. So it was quite a lot of work. And obviously we're trying to develop ways of doing this sort of thing a bit more efficiently.
Has the survey been completely finished by now?
Yes, it's been completely finished, but there are all sorts of things that we're doing to follow up the survey, which will continue for quite a while. There are also new instruments coming online, for example, LOFAR, eMerlin, and there are various optical telescopes which are going to produce very many more gravitational lenses in the future.
What has the Cosmic Lens All-Sky Survey found?
Well, we found, as I say, we found 22 lenses. These can be followed up, which has been done both by ourselves and by others, for mass distribution, so as to work out how masses in galaxies are distributed. They can also be followed up in an attempt to learn about the value of the Hubble constant. This is also an application of gravitational lensing, and it arises in the case where the background object varies. Now, if the background object varies, then this variation travels to you along two different light paths. So let's just suppose that the object suddenly gets brighter, then this brightening travels to you along two different light paths, or more than two, corresponding to the light that travels through the plane of the lensing galaxy and to the observer along two different paths. Now, if you can measure that, let's just say that one of the images brightens and then 10 days later the other image brightens, then that means that the difference in the two light paths must be 10 light days. And because you know an absolute distance within the system, then provided you know all the angles, if you go back to the ancient Greeks, then you can find out that with those two pieces of information, then you can work out all the distances in the system. And if you compare the distances to the galaxy and the quasar with the redshift, then, of course, that gives you the Hubble constant. In practice, it isn't as easy as that, but you can have a fairly good attempt at trying to work out the Hubble constant from gravitational lensing systems, provided that the background source is variable. So we, and again others, have spent quite a lot of time trying to do that as well.
Sounds to me like there are already many important results from gravitational lenses. Are there any special results expected from gravitational lenses in the near future?
Well, there's a number of things that we're trying to do with new instruments that are coming along. As I say, one thing we're trying to do is measure the Hubble constant. Some other things that we're trying to do include the detection of central images. Now, I've said before that gravitational lensing systems typically give you two or four images of the background object. That isn't quite true. There is an extra image, which is known as the odd image, for obvious reasons. And that is an image which results from a light path that goes almost through the centre of the lensing galaxy. And that is very interesting because the brightness of that central image tells you about the mass distribution or the lensing potential right at the centre of the lensing galaxy within 10 or 20 parsecs typically from the centre. And that in turn is very interesting because it lets you probe the distribution of mass right at the centre of a galaxy at typically of redshift 0.5 or something like that. And that is something that we would very much like to be able to do because you have some sort of central concentration of stellar mass and you may have a central black hole. Now, the problem at the moment is that these images are very, very faint. There is one that's been detected by a US group in a lens that they discovered, but no other cases or no other secure cases are known. And with instruments coming along like eMerlin and the extended VLA, we should be able to detect these images, if not routinely, at least we stand a much better chance of doing it just because of increased sensitivity.
Thank you very much.